Hi, I'm Jamie, host of Murderish, a true crime podcast that provides a 3D look at gripping murder cases from beginning to end. You'll get to know the victims and perpetrators, how their worlds collided, and what went down during trial. I also share some of my own personal experiences, like the time a stranger came into my bedroom at night. Yeah, that really happened. And I walk you through all the details of that terrifying night. Have you ever wanted to be a fly on the wall during a murder trial? You'll get that opportunity on Murderish, as I share my experience being a jury foreman on a first-degree murder trial. Search Murderish in your favorite podcatcher app, hit subscribe, and start binging. And remember, listening to this podcast doesn't make you a murderer. It just means you're murder-ish.
Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. In 2015, a 12-year-old girl in foster care vanished in Brisbane, Australia. It took 6 days before police even appealed to the public to try and find her, sparking a much-needed debate on how children in out-of-home care or children with difficult backgrounds are treated much differently than other children. The outcome of the case would reveal that the disappearance had been meticulously planned, but by who? Tia Lee Palmer was a 12-year-old girl living in Chambers Flat in Brisbane, Australia. She was affectionately known as Tia. She was afraid of the dark, and those who knew her said that she was very naive and eager to please. She was a student at Marsden State High School, where she was a hard worker who never got into any trouble. In fact, on one occasion where her classmates were playing up, Tia stood up and said, "Can you all behave yourself for the teacher, please? We're meant to be good kids, not bad kids." Tia loved cheerleading and the drama club, and always knew how to make her friends laugh. For a period, Tia had lived on and off with her grandmother before being placed into foster care at the age of 9 years old.
Oh, she was so much like me in many ways when I was that age. She was a free spirit.
Tia's life was very tumultuous and unsteady, to say the very least. In fact, she had stayed with one foster carer for less than 24 hours before being moved onto another home. Over the course of the years that Tia was in foster care, her mother, Cindy Palmer, was in and out of police custody and struggled with addictions and was the victim of domestic violence. Despite her issues, Cindy and Tia remained close.
At first, I was so devastated being apart from her that I spiraled out of control into drugs and homelessness. I still firmly believe that the day that I went to the department asking for help, I made the right decision. It's not what I wanted, and it wasn't the outcome any of us wanted. But at the end of the day, that was, I thought, was the safer option.
In 2015, Tia was sent to live with the Thornburn family, which consisted of Rick and Julian and their two sons, 19-year-old Trent and 20-year-old Josh. They lived in a spick-and-span rented home on a big block with horses out the back. Rick and Julene had been married for 26 years. Rick was born in New Zealand and moved to Australia in the 1980s. In the 1990s, they bred dogs, and Rick had worked as a truck driver before a back injury left him unable to drive trucks. He started working as a classic car dealer, and in mid-2015, he started an American fast food business with his two sons, Trent and Josh. It was called Nothing Healthy Here. In an interview with a local newspaper, he said that he started the fast food van to support his family. The family also brought in money through a home daycare. Julene had gained a license through the Welfare Family Daycare Scheme and had studied for a Certificate 3 and Diploma in Education. Josh had been licensed to work as an assistant alongside his mother. Trent was a dancer who at one point took part in a clinic with the reality show So You Think You Can Dance. Tia's mother, Cindy, had desperately been trying to get her daughter out of foster care and get her back under her own roof. In mid-October, Cindy got custody back of Tia's biological brother, and now she wanted Tia back home too. On the 30th of October 2015, Tia never returned home from school and was reported missing by Rick. The first point of action was for investigators to retrace Tia's steps. On the morning of her disappearance, Rick said that he had dropped Tia off outside a primary school on Chambers Flat Road at 8:10 a.m. The road was just a little further down from Marsden High School, where Tia was a student. She had been wearing her school uniform, which consisted of a white short-sleeved shirt with maroon and blue pinstripes and a blue knee-length skirt, and she was carrying her floral backpack. According to Tia's teachers, however, Tia never showed up for classes. Tia's friends and family were distraught by her disappearance, and they turned to social media in a public appeal for answers. According to one relative, Tia had run away from home in the past, but said that it was only ever for a few hours. When the sun went down that evening, they knew that something sinister must have happened to Tia. There was just no way that she would be out in the dark on her own. She was afraid of the dark, after all. Furthermore, she didn't take any of her belongings or any money with her. They searched the streets for Tia and contacted the parents of her friends. The Thornburn family posted a message on a Facebook group for residents in the Logan area, which read, "If any of her friends are hiding her again, please do the right thing and let us know. She needs to come home where she belongs." Tia's mother, Cindy, was also posting frantically on social media about her missing daughter and messaging numerous people who lived in the area. She wrote, "At this point, I don't care if she doesn't want to come home. I just need to know that she's okay." As Tia's friends and family were busy searching for Tia, it was noticed that Tia's Facebook had been deactivated around the same time that she vanished. A number of people would come forward to say that they believed that they had seen Tia in various locations across Logan, which made investigators begin to wonder whether Tia had made plans to ditch school that morning and meet somebody. According to one of Tia's friends, Kaylin, after Rick had dropped Tia off, she saw her walk past her up the road. She said that she didn't stop Tia and thought that she was maybe heading towards McDonald's. While Tia's loved ones were desperately searching for information regarding her whereabouts, police didn't make an appeal until 6 days after she vanished. As it would be discovered, police had considered Tia to be a runaway, despite the fact that her family were adamant that she had not run away and that something sinister had happened. It appeared as though they saw Tia's disappearance through tunnel vision and saw that she had a troubled background and just shrugged her disappearance off. Around 5 hours after the appeal to find Tia was finally launched by police, a grim discovery was made. Three fishermen came across a body of a young girl in a grassy area on the banks of the Pimpama River near the Kirkin Road North Bridge. The body could not be identified by sight alone, and as Superintendent Dave Hutchinson said, the body had significant decomposition, and it was speculated that she had been dead for up to a week. It was estimated that the girl had dark hair and was between the ages of 12 and 18. The body was nude, other than some jewellery. In fact, it would take 5 days for a positive identification to be made. It was determined that the body was Tia.
The cause of death has not yet been determined, but it's being treated as a homicide investigation for that very reason. We don't know what happened.
Due to the decomposition, a cause of death could never be determined, but investigators announced that she had been murdered. They further stated that they could not rule out that the body had floated downstream to where it was found, but said that they were more of the opinion that the body had been left there. Following the identification, investigators appealed to the public and asked anybody to come forward if they were in the vicinity of the bridge within the past week. They also asked people to come forward if they had seen any people or vehicles that appeared to be suspicious or out of place. Superintendent Dave Hutchinson stated, "Even if they think that they can't help us, even if they think that they saw nothing, it's really important that they come forward and tell us that they saw nothing so that we can make a timeline." Police were lambasted by much of the public when it was publicly revealed that Tia had gone missing 6 days before they finally launched a public appeal. Police defended their delay and stated that in those 6 days, they had been investigating her disappearance by reviewing CCTV footage and interviewing her friends, family, and potential witnesses. They said that Tia's foster family had said, "She'd been running away a lot more frequently this year, and I don't know why." Many were quick to point out that when Daniel Morecambe, Jill Meagher, and Alison Bade and Clay vanished, their disappearances were reported in the media right away. As The Guardian wrote, the public wanted accountability in those cases. A number of people felt that the public only wanted accountability for certain types of victims, and felt that Tia was overlooked not only because she had a troubled background, but because she was Indigenous. In fact, just a month before Tia vanished, Queensland had triumphed the fact that they were the first Australian state to introduce the Amber Alert. So why didn't they use it in this case? Julie Langler, a parent who had 2 children at the same school as Tia, said that she knew about Tia's disappearance through Facebook, but said that she was shocked by police's inaction to publicly state that Tia was missing. Speaking with Albert and Logan News, she said, "Maybe if it had been quicker and more people had known, maybe they could have found her." Investigators were speaking with Tia's family members as well as her foster carers and friends. They urged parents at Marsden State High School to talk to their children. They felt that if Tia had any plans to meet with somebody or was planning on going somewhere, then she very likely would have confided in her friends. Investigators were also keen on speaking with any residents of Chambers Flat and Macho Roads near the school who had CCTV cameras set up outside their homes. Furthermore, they asked locals to keep an eye out for Tia's school uniform as well as her backpack, which remained missing. Another angle for investigators was to scour through lists of sex offenders in the area. A makeshift memorial appeared outside Tia's school, where locals and loved ones of Tia left flowers, teddy bears, cards, and trinkets. The Thornburn family left behind a teddy bear with a note which read, "Tia, you are my mate. We spent so many nights together. Although I'm just a bear, we comforted each other and you talked to me as if I was real. I'll miss your hugs and talks. And with you always, love forever, Bear." following day, a candlelight vigil was held at Havenburgh Park, which was located just across the road from Tia's school. Over 500 people showed up to commemorate the life of Tia, a number of which were Tia's school friends. Her friend Angel was there with her mother, who said, "How do you explain to your child these awful things happen in the world?" Tia's friend sang "I'll Love You for a Thousand Years," while a number of boys from her school performed the haka. When students went back to school on the Monday, assemblies had been planned to debrief the students on what had happened and to provide counselling if needed. The gates outside the school had become a memorial to Tia, and as the students were ushered inside, many of them stopped for a moment of reflection. Some of the students were so overcome with emotion that they cried at the school gates long after the school bell rung. Principal Andrew Peach said that the entire school was deeply shocked and saddened by Tia's senseless death. Investigators on the case embarked on the school and were interviewing pupils to try and ascertain if anybody had seen Tia on the day she vanished. The last place that she had been seen was outside the school gates. Within just days, they had received over 200 tips from the public, and were now in the process of sifting through the tips. State Emergency Services volunteers and police divers scoured the area where Tia's body had been found in search of any evidence, but were unsuccessful. Tia's murder prompted an urgent review into how foster children are reported missing. In requesting the review, Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk said that she was shocked at Tia's death and how her disappearance was treated. She stated, "For a little girl to vanish and then be found dead days later is extremely distressing, to say the very least." She requested that the Principal Commissioner of the Queensland Family and Child Commission conduct a review of how the system and arrangements in place for responding to missing children who are in out-of-home care. Queensland Minister for Child Safety, Shannon Fentiman, echoed this sentiment. She said that it was imperative that everything was done to prevent another case. The murder also led to calls for CCTV cameras to be installed across all schools in Queensland. Ipswich Mayor Paul Pissasalli said that the investigation into Tia's murder would not have been so heavily reliant on footage recorded by the public if the school had have been fitted with security cameras. On the 14th of November, Tia's funeral was held at the Brisbane Anglican Maori Mission. Hundreds of mourners packed into the small church wearing purple t-shirts with Tia's face emblazoned on the front with a white heart and Tia's name. Purple was Tia's favourite colour. During the service, Tia was described as a young girl who loved shopping, movies and dancing. Celebrant Rodney Shafarius said, "She loved playing with dogs, crafting and fishing." He said that Tia had a lot of good qualities and a few shortcomings, but said that these shortcomings made her beautifully imperfect. Her school chaplain, Ian Pratt, said that her greatest role in life was as a daughter, a sister, a granddaughter, a niece, a cousin, and a friend. Tia's casket sat at the front of the church, with around 400 white roses placed on the top. Following the service, members of the Maori community performed the haka in Tia's honour, as her casket was taken away by hearse for a private cremation. Just the day after the funeral, Detective Superintendent David Hutchinson announced that they believed that Tia may have been planning to skip school on the day she vanished and may have been going to meet somebody. He said that investigators were concerned that some of Tia's friends very likely knew about her plans to skip school, but were worried that if they revealed that they knew, they may get in trouble. He tried to calm their fears by saying that nobody would be in trouble, and that they just wanted to get to the bottom of what happened to Tia. In a news conference, he said that they couldn't rule out that Tia was just randomly picked up by somebody at the side of the road, but said that the chances of that happening on the same day that she chose to skip school was statistically low. With lack of evidence and clues, investigators turned their attention back to the river where Tia's body had been discovered. During the renewed search, they discovered a shoe which they believed belonged to Tia. Despite an exhaustive search, the single shoe was the only piece of evidence that they found. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help, it's professional counselling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counselling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counselling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counsellors specialising in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counsellor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. As a true crime podcast fan and author, sometimes I need a little break from all of the negativity and something to take the edge off. What better than a mobile puzzle game filled with cute characters? I'm sure you've already heard of Best Fiends. There's over 100 million global downloads, and it truly seems like everybody is playing it. And I think that you should be playing it too. They've even sponsored today's episode of Morbidology. As you progress through the game, you collect cute little monsters that you can evolve as you make your way through the levels. Best Fiends is easy to follow and fun to play, making it the perfect game for both adults and children. It's a casual game that won't stress you out, and it's very easy to pass the time with. I find myself playing it mostly before bed, and I'm already on level 241. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. ...2015 came to an end with no updates in the murder case. In early February, a $250,000 reward was put forward for information that could lead to Tia's killer. Detective Superintendent Dave Hutchinson announced the reward, which had been put forward by the Queensland Government. The reward also came with indemnity from prosecution for the first person to provide information. He revealed that the indemnity was important because investigators believed that they had already interviewed people who knew what happened to Tia. He stated that they believed that people were withholding information from them, either out of fear of repercussions for their own involvement or loyalty to Tia's killer. Following the information regarding the reward, Tia's mother Cindy spoke publicly. On national television, she appealed for anybody with any information to please come forward and said that she worried every single night that another child could be taken like Tia was. In June, the Queensland Family and Child Commission's When a Child is Missing report was released, which gave 29 recommendations to improve systems for responding to missing children in out-of-home care. They found that there was a delay in issuing a media release requesting public information into Tia's disappearance, as well as misinformation and confusion surrounding who had authority to release information, which caused delays. In response to the report, Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk announced a new joint agency protocol which would better coordinate responses between police, schools and child safety authorities. This included the school being responsible for a same-day notification to parents or carers when a child is absent from school. This meant that police no longer had to be given permission from the Department of Child Safety to issue a media alert about a missing child from out-of-home care. Going forward, children under the age of 13 who go missing are automatically assessed as high risk, while Tia was assessed as medium risk. Towards the end of July, a memorial walk was held in memory of Tia. The walk was organised by Cindy. She said that she had organised the walk to maintain a public awareness of her daughter's murder. Supporters gathered at the gates of the Morriston State High School, where purple wristbands with the words "Justice for Tia" were handed out. Meanwhile, three local buses were emblazoned with Tia's face, while a Crime Stoppers hotline was implemented. There wasn't really a big update in the case until September of 2016, almost a year after Tia vanished. Investigators announced that they had seized a vehicle of interest in relation to the case. Detective Superintendent Mark White described the car as a 2009 blue Ford XR6 sedan. He asked the public to come forward if they had seen the blue sedan in or near Kirkin Road North on the 30th of October. He made it clear that the owner of the car was not a suspect in Tia's disappearance and stated that the car had changed hands in the 11 months since Tia's murder. In an unexpected twist, Cindy would take to Facebook to reveal that the car in question had originally belonged to Tia's foster father, Rick, who had allegedly dropped Tia off at school on the morning of her disappearance. She further posted that just days after Tia vanished, Rick had sold the car. Just days later, Rick was arrested and charged with the murder of Tia. Even more explosive, Rick's son, who was Tia's 19-year-old foster brother, Trent, was arrested and charged with incest. In addition, her foster mother, Julen, and her other foster brother, 20-year-old Josh, were arrested and remanded in custody with charges not initially brought against them. Investigators announced that the main angle they were now investigating in relation to the Thornburn family was whether Rick had murdered Tia to protect Trent after discovering that he had been sexually abusing Tia. When questioned, Rick denied any knowledge of Tia's murder.
Did you have anything to do with the death of Tia Lee?
Absolutely not.
How was her demeanour that morning?
She was on the case. She was happy, you know, was really sprightly. You know, and I was sort of pleased that she was happy that day.
It was revealed that the family appeared at a secret star chamber hearing of the Crime and Corruption Commission. The almost year-long investigation had quickly turned to the family when investigators had been unable to corroborate Rick's claims that he had dropped Tia off near her school on the morning she vanished. Detective Inspector Damian Hansen said that Julene had been a key witness and that Josh had been cooperating with the investigation. The arrest came as a complete and utter shock to not only Tia's family, but the entire community. The Thornburn family had rallied around and truly seemed proactive in trying to find Tia, when all along, they knew that she was dead. In fact, Rick had even been a pallbearer at Tia's funeral. Tia's grandmother said that the arrest had completely knocked the wind out of her sails. She said that Tia was a lovely girl and the thought of what she went through brought tears to her eyes. Speaking of Tia's funeral, she said, "They took pride of place at the funeral, which I didn't think they deserved, and people treated them as though they were parents of long standing, which they weren't." The Thornburn family truly had appeared to be the grieving foster family, begging for information and searching for Tia. It would be revealed that less than a week after Tia's funeral, Rick had started looking for more children to fill Tia's place. On an International College's Facebook page, he wrote, "Hi, We have accommodation available for one or two students. Happy home environment on acreage, own room and pick-up drop-off available. We are Blue Card approved and offer a clean, safe home. Happy to have you join in our family activities. There are four of us, myself, Rick and wife Julene, and two sons, both ex-students, Josh and Trent, age 19 and 20, as well as our horses and dogs. All very friendly. When Tia was in the care of the Thornburn family, all four members had blue cards. These cards allow Queenslanders to work with children. However, back in May, 6 months after Tia's body was discovered, their blue cards were suspended and they ceased operating the daycare with no intention of it being reopened. When they were all arrested and it was discovered that at one point they all had blue cards, there were calls for the blue card vetting system to be investigated, as well as the foster care system. In fact, over the past 2 years alone, more than 1,600 blue cards had been cancelled or suspended for serious breaches, which included sexual assault, child pornography, and even the murder of a child. Over the same period, almost 5,000 people had been ruled too high a risk to work with children, and their applications for blue cards were denied. A lot of people called on the Queensland Family and Child Commission to look into the circumstances surrounding Tia's foster placement. It would be revealed that Rick and Julene had been approved as foster carers back in August of 2014. Shortly thereafter, Tia came under their care. All relevant checks, including criminal history checks and reference checks, were undertaken and they had completed the mandatory training. Child Safety Minister Shannon Fentiman said that following Tia's disappearance, the Thornburn family had continued to run their daycare business up until May, when it was closed down following alleged criminal conduct. Police had informed the Department of Education and Training of the alleged criminal activity, and it was the first time that there had been any concerns raised about the family. The following day, Rick and Trent were scheduled to appear in court for a bail hearing. However, only Trent was there. After Rick was arrested, he had taken a number of pills, causing him to collapse and to be placed in an induced coma in Brisbane's Princess Alexandra Hospital's secure wing. During the court hearing, it would be revealed that a tip to Crime Stoppers in April had proved crucial in cracking the case wide open. Court documents allege that the day before Tia vanished, Trent had sent a Facebook message to his cousin, stating that he had raped Tia and that he was worried that she may have been pregnant. In the message, Trent claimed that he had only raped Tia because she had threatened to kill his dog. He further divulged to his cousin that Tia had spoken to his mother about what he had done. Part of the message read, "I just want the kid gone and out of my life, but I know she is also a source of income for mum and dad as well, and I can't risk us losing money. Also, if Tia did say something to Children's Services and she is pregnant, then it all gets investigated and I could go to jail, because a court isn't going to believe me over her." By this point, both Julene and Josh had been released from custody but were still facing charges of perjury and attempting to pervert the course of justice. They did not attend court in support of Trent, but Cindy was there. She was wearing a Justice for Tia Lee t-shirt while other family members wore purple. During the court hearing, Sergeant French detailed the submission which opposed Trent's bail. He said that Tia had confided in friends that she was being sexually abused by Trent. He said, "A statement had been obtained by a friend of the victim who said the victim had disclosed to her that when her foster carer went out, their son would then have sex with her." Tia had also confided in Julene, as well as another friend who she told, "Trent tried to touch me." The friend approached Trent and he denied the allegation. It would be revealed that Trent had misled police and gave them false statements. He claimed that when Tia vanished, he had seen her at home that morning as she got ready for school. after Trent was confronted about the sexual abuse. He first of all denied it before admitting to it. Sergeant French revealed that they believed that Tia had been smothered to death by Rick the evening before she was reported missing. She suggested that Rick had learned about the sexual abuse and worried that Trent could end up in prison, where he believed that he would be targeted by other inmates. In requesting that bail be denied, Sergeant French said that Trent could interfere with witnesses, such as his mother, brother, and cousin, as well as pose a risk for offending against other children. At the time of his arrest, Trent had been teaching dance class at a children's school. Trent's defence lawyer, John Ide, argued that Trent should be granted bail because he could live away from his family and that he could end up serving more time in jail on remand than he would if convicted of the charges. Ultimately, Trent was denied bail. Within a few days of Trent being incarcerated, he was attacked numerous times. In prison and jail hierarchy, paedophiles and child killers are the lowest of the low. He was being kept in an area for high-risk prisoners, including accused paedophiles and high-profile inmates. One morning, he was attacked and returned to the same area after being treated to. He was attacked once again by two inmates in the afternoon, while a massive crowd of inmates cheered them on. When it was revealed that the Thornburn family had been persons of interest from day one of the investigation, many people questioned why child safety and education departments were not notified by police until 5 months later. Foster Care Queensland Executive Director Brian Smith said that a review needed to be conducted and stated the police should have to notify departments when a person who holds a blue card or a foster care approval becomes a person of interest, even if they are not considered a suspect. A lot of people lambasted the foster care system as a whole and said that it was underfunded and overburdened. Central Queensland had been flagged as a region in high demand of additional child safety workers. On the 10th of October, Julene and Josh were back in court, where it was revealed that they had made full admissions and would be pleading guilty to charges of perjury and attempting to pervert the course of justice. They also agreed to be witnesses to the prosecution, meaning that they would be testifying against Rick and Trent. Shortly thereafter, it was the 1 year anniversary of Tia's murder. Her mother, Cindy, posted on Facebook and asked for the public to remember Tia for the angelic, free spirit, loving, caring, funny girl that she was, and not to remember her for the tragic way in which she was murdered. She urged people to get together with their loved ones and spend quality time together. In December, Trent attempted once more to get bail. While the bail was denied, it was revealed during the hearing that Tia wasn't the only underage sexual abuse victim of Trent. While they didn't go into detail, Supreme Court Justice John Bond said that a Crown witness had alleged Trent had abused another young female. Shortly thereafter, more court documents were released, which gave more insight into Tia's murder. The day before the murder, Julene had informed Rick that Trent had told her that he had sex with Tia and feared that she may be pregnant. It was also disclosed that Josh had told investigators that he believed that his father may have killed somebody before. After his arrest, he told them, "I knew Dad had killed someone years ago when he was a child in care. I think Dad wanted to assure us that he had killed before and didn't get caught. And that's why he told us the story."
I don't know when. It was a very long time ago, much longer before I was born, that he had, and I didn't know about this until that night as well, but he was in care. He had killed a guard or someone of the sorts that was at the facility he was in care at. I don't remember where it was, what it was, who it was.
You say he told you this while he was telling you this up there?
He told me afterwards that he had that he had done that previously.
Why do you think he would tell you that?
I think he wanted to try and assure us that no one was going to find out that he'd done it before, and he got away with it.
During that discussion at home, did he discuss with you the intricacies of how she was killed?
No. I still don't know what happened there. I just know that he did. That he did do it.
Julien had told investigators that Tia was at dance class in the afternoon and had complained about stomach pain. When she came home, Julien gave her some Nurofen and sent her to the shower. It was then that Trent came to his mother and confessed that he feared that Tia may be pregnant.
And Trent came out to me and he started to cry and he said, Mum, I've done something terrible. And he said, I've had a sexual encounter with Tia or something to those words.
Okay, I was going to say, were they
those? No, probably not the words, but I don't really remember exactly what it was then, but it indicated that he'd had sexual encounter with Tia.
The message was clear.
It was, yeah. And I said, oh my God, mate.
So you were shocked?
I was absolutely stunned, shocked. I said, oh mate, no. How could you let something like that happen? And he sort of briefly expressed to me that she had come on to him and that she had threatened our Labrador's life if he didn't do it. So that really concerned me. I said, we will deal with it. Don't let it worry you. Just go to dance, do what you've got to do. We will talk about all this and just try and get it out of your head, sort of thing. I did say to Rick that Trent just came and told me that he'd had a sexual encounter with Tia, and Trent had indicated to me that it was the Sunday previous.
And how was his reaction?
I wouldn't say he was cross, but he was disturbed about it, and he was very concerned because he knows the implications for a boy of his age with a girl of her age.
Of course.
He was adamant about him doing jail time, that he'll go to jail for something like this.
Yeah.
So Rick was, extremely concerned about that.
Yeah.
And he couldn't allow Trent to go to jail. He just can't let it happen. We were concerned she could be pregnant or something.
And did you have that conversation with Rick at that time?
I think it did.
Okay.
It was mentioned.
Yeah.
But no, pains in the stomach, no.
Yeah.
We were worried that she could be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
We just all felt that, that we had to keep it to ourselves and we would get Trent some help, like a psychologist. We would make sure that Tia was okay and make sure she wasn't pregnant, hopefully. And if she was, we would deal with it and we would look after her and make sure everything was all right.
As mentioned, Trent had divulged this information to a cousin as well. It would be revealed during the court hearing that when this cousin was younger, she had also been molested by Trent. Julien went over to the cousin's house to speak about what Trent had told them. She said that she came home around 10 p.m. At this point, Trent and Josh were at a dance class and she waited outside for them to return home. When they pulled up, they all went inside together. They found Rick sitting in the lounge where he called for a family meeting.
I got inside and I said to Rick, was Tia okay? And I think he said something about, the exact words, it's all taken care of or something. Said, what do you mean by that? I said, don't worry. Don't ask any questions. I've taken care of it. And I went to go to her room and he said, don't go in there. I said, why not? And he said, I told you it's sorted, it's taken care of. I said, what do you mean? He said, don't ask any questions. I guess I had a gut feeling that something wasn't right. But I couldn't really do much about it. If that's what he's done, I didn't want to see it or know anything about it. So
So you didn't ask him direct?
No. No.
And did he tell you direct?
No.
Julian claimed that she asked Rick if Tia was okay, to which Rick replied with, "Tia is no longer with us. I hope you understand what that means. I've made the right decision. It's already been done. I can't change it." Julian said the following day she realised that Tia was not in her bedroom and she thought the worst. However, she claimed that she never outright asked Rick if he had murdered Tia. Next, you're going to hear a portion of Josh's interview with investigators when he details what happened. At one point, he claims that Tia was the one to hit on Trent, despite the fact that Tia was a child.
I didn't know about it until she had been murdered. And I was informed later that day of everything that had happened, and she had had sex with my brother at a point I don't know when. Dad called us into the lounge room to discuss that there was a few things happening. Trent had, it was at that point that I was then informed about what Trent had done with Tia. And Dad called us in, sat us down, proceeded to explain that Trent had had sex with Tia. He also said to me, which I still fully believe, that Trent didn't force himself on Tia. She was at that stage where she was looking into sex and puberty and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What I was told, that she forced herself on him.
So when you heard that?
I was very shocked.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to look at either of them.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't said at that point that he'd done the rest of it. At that point, yeah, he just said that Trent had had sex with Tia. And Dad proceeded to say that we all had to protect Trent. We all had to keep a story amongst everyone, and the public and everyone else, that the next day Tia was going to go missing from school. He then informed me that Tia was, his exact words were, "Tia is no longer with us." And also he said, "I hope you understand what that means."
That night, as police were searching for Tia, Rick told Julian that he had something he needed to do. He handed her his mobile phone and told her to answer his text messages because police would be able to trace it to see where he was. She recalled that Rick then backed his car into the shed, where he spent 15 to 30 minutes before driving on. According to police, Rick had murdered Tia, hidden her body in the shed, and then dumped it. The court documents further revealed that police had installed electronic surveillance in the family's home and had recorded them discussing plans to lie. There were further court documents that indicated that Rick threatened to murder Julian if she ever left and that Josh had wanted to come forward with what had happened but was afraid that his father would kill him too. In March of 2017, it was announced that the state government would be investing $6 million to improve how information is shared between key agencies when a child goes missing. Protocols changed to ensure that police could issue an Amber Alert warning of a suspected child abduction without needing approval from child safety, regardless of whether the child is in care. In July, Josh appeared in court for the sentencing phase. He was sentenced to 9 months in jail for attempting to pervert the course of justice and 15 months in jail for perjury. In handing down the sentence, Judge Chowdhury said that he accepted that Josh had been afraid of his father. He further stated that he believed that Josh felt genuine remorse for what had happened and that he had been receiving a number of threats of violence on social media. During the hearing, it was publicly revealed that a secret recording had captured the family talking about sticking to the same story, that Tia had gone to school, when in fact, she was already dead. The family had stuck to this story up until the very end, when confronted with all of the evidence. The judge said that this was a disgraceful and immoral plan to conceal the cold and calculated murder of a 12-year-old girl. It was then announced that Josh would be serving just 3 months of his sentence. He was released in October. A couple of months later, it was Trent's turn to be sentenced. During the hearing, Trent's confession to his mother that he had been sexually abusing Tia was described as the catalyst that led to her murder. Trent was sentenced to 4 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to 2 counts of perjury and 1 count each of incest and attempting to pervert the course of justice. Having already served almost 1 year in pre-sentence custody, Trent's sentence would then be suspended for 5 years in just 4 months. He subsequently applied for bail, stating that the sentence was manifestly excessive. His bail would be denied. His sentence was followed by Julene, who was sentenced to 18 months in jail after pleading guilty to perjury and attempting to pervert the course of justice. She was ordered to serve 6 months in jail before the sentence is suspended for 3 years. In handing the sentence down, the judge said that Julene stayed silent because she was afraid of losing the breadwinner. He said, "It is extraordinary that your motivation was largely to protect the family, but also to maintain a lifestyle." With all of the sentences handed down for the rest of the family, it was now time for Rick to be indicted in the Supreme Court on a murder charge. As the murder case was preparing to be sent to trial, Trent was released from prison. He had spent most of his sentence in solitary confinement because he was a massive target for other inmates. In total, he had spent just 16 months behind bars. 3 months later, Julene was released. On the 25th of May, Rick Thornburn pleaded guilty to the murder of Tia, as well as to interfering with a corpse, attempting to pervert the course of justice, and perjury. He was sentenced to life in prison and ordered to serve at least 20 years before being considered for parole. In handing down the sentence, Justice David Bodis said, "You murdered this defenceless child who relied on you for protection." He said that the way Rick left Tia's body on the riverbank showed that he had no respect for her, even in death. In a letter submitted to the court, which had been written by Rick, he claimed that he was haunted by what he had done every single day. Rick failed to offer an explanation for the murder and instead claimed that he had no memory of killing Tia. He even claimed that he loved Tia and still loved Tia. He wrote, "I have never even smacked my own children, and I never wanted to treat anyone the way I was treated as a child." He further stated that he had gleaned from other police statements that he had displayed appalling behaviour to his wife and sons in the aftermath of the murder, stating, "I made them fearful of me so much that they were worried for their safety, so much that they lied about what had happened, and for that, I am sorry, appalled and disgusted in myself." The letter ended with Rick addressing Tia, saying that she was dealt the worst by him. He wrote, "I was supposed to protect you and give you a good life, a good future that no one else wanted to. There is not a day that goes by that I am not haunted by what I have done." Outside of court, Cindy made a brief statement. She said, "Today marks the end of a long and painful fight for justice for Tia. As her mother, no sentence will ever be enough. Tia was a beautiful young girl who had her entire life to look forward to. Other than Rick, every other member of the Thornburn family has been released." In 2019, it was revealed that Trent was up on Tinder, searching for a partner. Shortly thereafter, from behind bars, Rick confessed to rape, an attempted rape, of two girls under the age of 12 at the family daycare in his home in 2014. As it turned out, the apple didn't fall too far from the tree. In September of 2020, Rick was rushed to hospital in critical condition after an overdose in prison. For a while, it was extremely touch and go, but Rick failed in his suicide attempt. He remains behind bars.
I try to remain positive and think about the good times and the smile on her face or her dancing, as opposed to thinking of the situation, which has put bad thoughts and bad images in my head.
In the wake of Tia Palmer's murder, her foster family were among the first to search for her, to beg friends for information and to comfort Tia's grieving mother. They were at the forefront for the massive search for Tia. Never in a million years did anybody ever suspect that the ones who had caused her disappearance, the ones who had decided that her life was worth less than the freedom of their sexual abuser son, were the very ones who were entrusted to protect her. Tia's disturbing murder led to a plethora of changes in how children in care are treated when they vanish. While these protocols could sadly not save Tia, they could save others. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Corleen Van Bruegel and Kathleen W. Morbidology is a one-woman team, and the support on Patreon helps to defray the costs of freedom of information requests, archive subscriptions, hosting, and much more. In return, you get monthly exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, which aren't on the regular feed. Early release episodes, ad-free episodes, true crime articles, polls, and you can even request a case for me to cover on the podcast. You can also sign up annually and get 15% off. Big thank you to everybody who has simply listened to an episode, commented on an episode, shared an episode. All of the support is very much appreciated. If you didn't know already, I have a new investigative true crime series, which came out on the 23rd of November. It's called The Shattered Window, and uncovers an unsolved murder as well as a wrongful conviction over the course of 10 episodes. Please make sure to subscribe to The Shattered Window wherever you're listening to Morbidology. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week. The murder of Jacqueline DeWallaby is a tragedy that has puzzled and polarized the minds of those who know it. Over the past 6 months, we've extensively investigated this case, trawling through files, trial transcripts, and archives, and have been conducting interviews with the people who've lived through it.
It was a sensational, startling fact that a 7-year-old little girl had shown up missing from a suburban home.
Something like that happening would have never crossed our parents' minds.
The notion that a stranger can slip into a child's bedroom in the middle of the night, completely undetected, is surely a notion that every single parent on this earth fears. But what's even more lamentable is knowing that a child killer is roaming the street, and even more chilling, they could be someone you know.
Hosted by Emily G. Thompson and Eileen McFarlane, this is The Shattered Window.